This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
Caught by Ingram over the defender.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
Jump ball, Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown!
Welcome to a special Monday edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk and Lance Meadow. Combine week is here. I'll be heading out with Paul Dottino late on Tuesday, and we'll have live shows from there Wednesday through Friday with a cavalcade of guests and other fun stuff from Indianapolis. He's Lance Meadow. I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to participate in the show that way. And as we get closer to free agency, Lance, as you know, the combine, that means people are talking draft. Well, you know what? The free agency market opens up a week after the combine's over. So that is what comes first. And we're starting to get some more stuff kind of come down the pike a little bit over this past weekend. A few tidbits, and I'll start with the one that's probably the most minor but might affect the Giants. The Panthers decided to put a franchise tag on their kicker, Graham Gano, and Giant fans will sit there and say, why would we care if they put a franchise tag on their kicker? Well, if you put the franchise tag on Graham Gano, you know who they can't put the franchise tag on? Andrew Norwell.
Which is why that is a key piece of information that you just laid out. Yeah, and it has been given to a kicker before, so this is not necessarily a rare occurrence.
Cowboys did it with Dan Bailey, if I'm not mistaken?
I believe so. And wasn't Gostkowski given one by the Patriots?
And maybe even Janikowski might have gotten one, too, at some
point. Janikowski may have been given, too. I could tell you it's definitely happened a few times, so I don't think this is uncharted territory. But
did the Giants do it with Weatherford?
I don't know if they did it with Weatherford. They may have done it with another kicker
a
little bit earlier in the day.
I thought I remembered somebody doing the Giants doing it with a kicker.
I believe they did, but I don't think it was Weatherford. I could be mistaken. I think it was a kicker we're talking a little bit earlier in terms of Giants history. But your main point is clearly that Andrew Norwell is not going to be given the tag because you can't use multiple tags in the same offseason. So, therefore, he will have an opportunity to hit the free agent market, which I'm sure is going to be appealing to many Giants fans. But it's going to be appealing to many other teams as well who are looking to improve the interior of their offensive line. And let's also not rule out the possibility, John, that just because he wasn't given the franchise tag does not mean that Carolina is out of the running in potentially re-signing him as well. So, sometimes I feel when a tag is given to another the player, people start to read into it a little too much. There is still a lot of things that could play out with respect to Andrew Norwell's status moving forward, but this also means that there could be competition for him as opposed to the Panthers saying we're going to protect him and keep him in the corner.
Absolutely, and obviously offensive line has become a position of scarcity, so there will be a heavy market for all of the top offensive linemen in free agency. By the way, they did put a franchise on Weatherford in the spring of 2012.
So you're right. Did you find, was it a kicker, though? I thought they also did it on a kicker, perhaps.
All I searched was franchise tag Weatherford, and that's what
now
came up.
Now curious, so I will try to
franchise
get to the
tag
bottom of
kicker
that.
Did not yield any results.
It
franchise
didn't.
Tag
okay.
Weatherford did, however. Couple other notes over the weekend. Of course, the big piece of information, another domino drops in the quarterback market. Blake Bortles, and I think there's a lot of levels to this that's interesting, signed a three-year contract extension with covers his fifth-year option year. 3 years, $54 million, about 26 of that, I believe, is guaranteed.
26 and a half.
26 and a half guaranteed. Now, the interesting part of this is that his fifth-year option would have become guaranteed at around $18.5 million or $19 million. If he was unable to pass his physical, which would take place at the start of the league year in just a couple of weeks, and he had wrist surgery a few weeks ago. Now, my impression was that he would not have been able to pass that physical, which would have made his $18 or $19 million this year fully guaranteed. But...
Salud.
Thank you.
Yes.
However, I was listening to Bob Papa and Ross Tucker on Sirius XM NFL Radio this morning, and a Jaguar beat reporter was on, and he said he was under the impression that Bortles would have been able to pass his physical. And I think that changes the outlook on the contract a little bit. I think maybe the amount of the contract makes a little bit less sense if that $18 million wasn't necessarily guaranteed for this year. But the bottom line is this. The Jaguars need a quarterback for this year for a team, given everyone else on their defense and the players around them, are clearly ready to win a Super Bowl. They were within one drive of knocking off the Patriots and going to the Super Bowl this year. So they're very close. And aside from either, you know, aside from Kirk Cousins, who I think would be an upgrade over Bortles, there's no guarantee you're going to get him in free agency if that Bortles fifth year is not guaranteed and they could have went on to the free agent market. You know, is Case Keenum that much better than Blake Bortles?
No.
I don't think so. You know, so at that point, I guess $18 million a year makes a little bit more sense. There's basically an out after 2 years of the deal where there's only a $6 million cap hit in the third year of that contract, so they can get out after 2 years. But they've now committed to Blake Bortles as a starter for 2018 and 2019. Bottom line.
And he has shown improvement over the last few seasons as well. So,
modicum,
I mean, it's understandable. But there has been enough improvement. Remember, I point this out all the time. If you look since Bortles came to the Jaguars, he has not had the same offensive coordinator consistently. He's had to learn a new system. And that, to me, should not be dismissed. Look at Alex Smith. Look at Mark Sanchez, John, early in their careers. There's a reason why both of those quarterbacks in particular, I believe, were up and down and struggled because they had no stability at the OC position. So that's something that can't be dismissed when you talk about Blake Bortles. I also think if you look at the quarterback market right now, John, it's a good value deal. I mean, like you said, they only locked him up for 3 years.
Well, he is the 17th. I believe, highest-paid quarterback. Do you think he's the 17th best quarterback in the league?
I mean, is he that far removed from 17th? I think he's maybe just outside the top 20. I don't think that's a stretch.
Well, let me ask you this, and this is how I'll look at it. Do you think Keenum and Bortles are pretty much on the same level, give or take?
Yeah, I don't think there's a huge disparity.
Do you think Tyrod Taylor's pretty much on the same level?
Yes, I would agree with you. Yeah.
Do you think Tyrod Taylor's going to get $26 million guaranteed and $54 million over 3 years?
Well, he did recently get an extension that Buffalo gave him. I don't remember the numbers, but they locked him up, and now all of a sudden, you know, maybe experimenting and looking at things. And here's the other thing to keep in mind.
And again, I don't think this is a case, Lance, by the way, where, you know, he's worth $7 million, they paid him $18. I think maybe they could have got him for like $12 to $14 a year
and
saved $4 or $5 million. But you know what? It's the devil you know. It's the bird in hand. They know what he is, and there is some value to that. And I think they were impressed by his leadership this year, and I think those types of things were things that I think Tom Coughlin and the group down there in Jacksonville probably valued a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, remember, Tom Coughlin gave Eli Manning his opportunity, so he understands the value of having a young quarterback still within the franchise and knowing you build around the trenches. You gave him an offensive line. He got Leonard Fournette. They had a really good defense. It's not as if Jacksonville, I think, feels as if they got to spend $30 million on Kirk Cousins.
And they lost their best wide receiver, by the way.
Allen Robinson, yet Blake Bortles still put up 21 touchdowns and 13 interceptions. He completed 60% of his passes, which was a career high. I understand these are just numbers, and there's more to evaluating a quarterback. Don't get me wrong, but to your point, John, and that was the other point I wanted to bring up, Allen Robinson tears his ACL in week one. He is left with D.D. Westbrook. He's left with Keelan Cole. If you would have walked past these guys on the street.
Well, Marquise Lee was there, and Allen Hurts.
But Marquise Lee got hurt, too.
Eventually.
And
Allen Hurts missed 2 games.
Allen Hurts missed about half the season.
He missed 6.
So, you know, he had a knee injury. There was a fluctuation in personnel around Blake Bortles. If people want to tell me that he was with the same unit all season long, then I suggest you go back and watch the tape.
No, that's fair.
Because that, to me, is completely misleading. So, interchangeable parts with personnel and all the stuff that he went through, I think they could have done far worse than re-upping with Blake Bortles. And the last point I wanted to make was the quarterback market cannot be dismissed. Yes, Blake Bortles may not be the 17th best quarterback in the National Football League, to your point, John, but Blake Bortles and his agent are also not dismissing the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo just got 5 years and $137.5 million. And I'm not comparing Jimmy to Blake Bortles. That's my point. Jimmy Garoppolo, though, 5 starts. With the San Francisco 49ers. Blake Bortles has been in the league for 4 years. You're going to tell me if you represent Blake Bortles, you're not going to go to Jacksonville and say, San Francisco just gave a guy that's got a resume of 5 games and what, he started 2 or 3 with the Patriots?
No, absolutely. That's fair.
I mean, that's common sense.
And by the way, I will say this too, since in reality it's only basically a 2-year deal because they can get out of that third year with only taking a $6 million cap hit. And then if you make him a post-June 1st cut, it's actually only a $3 million cap hit over
you. So you don't get bit by that. Yeah.
Exactly. So the Jaguars still, if when they get to their, whatever they pick, 29th in the first round this year,
which
whatever their pick happens
for them,
to
but
be,
yes, yeah.
And Lamar Jackson's sitting there, and I think he's a future quarterback. You know what? he wants to sit on the bench a couple years, you could still pick your young quarterback
absolutely.
In the future.
I agree with you.
And Bortles can be that veteran guy that'll sit there and kind of do that for you.
I do not think this contract takes them out of the running of still developing a quarterback.
Agreed.
Agree with you there. It's just that they have stability in the short term, at least, that they feel good that they can continue to build with Blake Bortles.
And I think the tricky thing here, and I think this is what people have trouble getting past, and I understand it too. Look, they sat there with 55 seconds to go in the first half against the Patriots, and they kneeled the ball. So that shows you that their level of confidence in Blake Bortles is not sky high. If they had a high level of confidence, they would have tried to score there, okay? Get it, okay? However, it's easy to say, well, you can't re-sign Blake Bortles, he stinks. Then what?
Yeah, what's option B?
You have a Jaguars team here that has a lot of young players on defense all on their rookie contracts, all right? This group is not going to be able to be kept together forever because you can't. It's the salary cap.
Seattle,
okay?
Same thing.
So you have a small window here where you can try and win. You know that you are within one defensive stop from getting to the Super Bowl this year. Can you risk letting Bortles walk without knowing what's happening next if you're the Jaguars, given how close you were to the Super Bowl last year? That's a very, very big risk, and I understand them not wanting to take it.
Well, it goes back to your point about comfort, which is something that they had to weigh in. Anybody who argues that it's time to move on from a quarterback has to then present to me plan B.
Correct.
That's what they have to do. Okay, so if you were to just look through the lens of Tom Coughlin and Dave Caldwell in Jacksonville's front office, so what is plan B if you choose to move on from Blake Bortles? And technically they didn't have to move on from him because he still had the fifth year of his rookie contract. But
which is not guaranteed except for injury.
Correct. But it's not as if they had to do this. But let's say, you know what, we have an opportunity to upgrade the position. Okay, so you look at the fact that you don't want to spend $30 million on Kirk Cousins, so you remove him. Okay, so now you move to the Vikings quarterbacks, and Teddy Bridgewater's coming off a torn ACL, so there's question marks with him. Sam Bradford has not stayed healthy for a full 16-game season. And Case Keenum, who had a career year, was that a flash, John? Or is that something that you think if we take Case Keenum out of Pat Shurmur in the Vikings system and move him elsewhere, can he duplicate that?
Good question.
You have to ask yourself that.
That's a fair question. Absolutely.
Okay, so all question marks connected to those. And you have to weigh that then to Blake knows our system. He's comfortable with our personnel. Can we just expect him to hopefully pick up where he left off? Those are the types of conversations you have to have. And I would not blame any executive for saying, you know what? Let's just, for the time being, lock up Blake Bortles and move on from there.
I see both sides of the issue, but I understand why the Jaguars certainly did what they did. The other piece of news over the weekend, and it's odd, we still haven't gotten final details on this, given how leaky these situations usually are.
Leaky's a very good word.
But the Kansas City Chiefs, now it's pretty obvious, folks. They are in a rebuilding process. They trade one of the best young corners in football in Marcus Peters. I saw some kind of stat where he is like four more splash plays per week or something like that than any other cornerback in football. He gets traded to the St. Louis Rams. The Los Angeles Rams for some combination of draft picks. Reports are that a first-round pick is not involved, and the Rams do not own their second-round pick this year. So I got to imagine it's probably their third-round pick this year, maybe their second-round pick next year, something like that. Remember, Peters is still on his rookie contract. He's a controllable asset for a couple more years. However, there's been a lot of off-the-field stuff with Marcus Peters. He got suspended the game for chucking the referee's flag into the stands last year. Funny, suspendable. He also knelt for the anthem last year, something that, according to Peter King, did not sit well with Chiefs owner Clark Hunt. So those are things that they took into consideration. But the Chiefs obviously trying to recap a lot of that draft assets that they traded to get Mahomes last year. They did it in the Alex Smith trade, and now they're doing it in the Marcus Peters
trade. Which we've seen teams do. You try to recover the following year. For example, the Eagles did the same thing when they traded Sam Bradford. Mm-hmm. We had to give up to get Carson Wentz. Now, all of a sudden, we get a first-round pick back. So that's not unusual in terms of the process that they went through. On the flip side, though, John, you look at the Rams, why this deal to me makes sense. Tremaine Johnson and LaMarcus Joyner are both set to be free agents. Now, Joyner moved over to safety, but Johnson, who they used the franchise tag on last season, is a cornerback who now you can feel comfortable if we part ways with him, at least we feel we have some insurance to replace him.
And I'd say better chance you re-sign Marcus Joyner now because you have a corner in hand in Marcus Peters, who's not making a ton of money because he's on his rookie deal, and then you bring Joyner back at safety
to shore up, the
shore up that position.
Yeah, that makes 100% sense, and I'm sure that was the logic, and I'm sure Wade Phillips is also saying to himself, well, if I've got to part ways with Tremaine Johnson, at least I know somebody else can be there who, even though Peters is young, he's played at a very high level.
Probably a better player than Johnson at this point in his career.
I don't disagree with that, and I think the other stat that I believe is noticeable in addition to what you threw out, you mentioned splash plays. He's already up there in terms of interception returns for touchdowns, and he hasn't even been in the league that long. So, extremely opportunistic player.
Yeah, big play guy. He's one of those few guys at corner that on defense, you know, usually it's only pass rushers that can change a game for a defense. Marcus Peters can change a game on the defensive side of the ball. He makes a lot of big plays. So, folks, that's on the docket. We can preview the combine as well. We'll talk about that as the show moves forward. But it's already 12:20, so we want to get to your calls at 201-939-4513. Let's get to him. Christian in New York has been holding the longest. Hi, Christian.
Hey, guys. I know with James Betcher, as of right now, it's kind of a guessing game with how the defensive line is going to usually play, but if they're basically going to have 3-4 defensive ends being responsible for, you know, the run game quite often, you know, just like a standard 3-4 front, to expect Jason Pierre-Paul to be able to do that is, I don't see that as realistic.
How do you know they're going to ask him to be a 3-4 defensive end and not a 3-4 outside linebacker pass rusher?
Well, I would love him to be the pass rusher.
Well, maybe he'll do that.
But as far as him being a 3-4 end, you know, he's actually kind of light for that. He's not like a oversized 4-3 end that can easily kick inside. I mean, I know when he was younger, he was just more powerful and explosive, so he would kick inside for the NASCAR package sometimes. But, you know, these 3-4 defensive ends are running close to 300 pounds. They're taking on double teams often, and this year he was getting washed up in the run game. So,
well, Christian, I'll say this. I don't think you ask 3-4 defensive ends to do quite as much as that taking on double teams as you used to. They kind of do more penetration one-gap stuff than what they've done in the past traditionally, and Betcher's defense in Arizona is included in that. But, Lance, I do think it's interesting, and Christian, we'll let you finish. We know who two of the linemen will be if they go with that 3-4 base front. You're going to have Snacks in the middle. You're going to have Dalvin Tomlinson as one of the other ends. Who do you use then as your third defensive lineman? Is it JPP? And then who you use as your two inside linebackers and your two outside linebackers? You assume Vernon is going to be one of those guys, and you would think Goodson will be one of the inside linebackers. But it does bring up some questions where guys fit best in that new formation.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look, though, how some of these players have been utilized with other defensive coordinators, we have seen Vernon and JPP drop back a little bit off the line of scrimmage. Not saying it happens all the time, and I'm not saying that's their strength.
Vernon was used as a stand-up rusher
correct.
A decent amount of Miami, a lot more than JPP was.
Yeah, so I think if you're going to go between the two, to Christian's point, I would probably have a little bit more confidence in Betcher experimenting with Vernon in that position than JPP. And I'm going based on resume. I'm not going based on what Betcher's done with other personnel like a Chandler Jones or whatever it may be. But Vernon does have that versatility. So if he uses Vernon that way, maybe he doesn't necessarily have to use JPP that way, to your point, John. And that means that you're looking at it more of an end position on the line as opposed to somebody that's going to drop back as one of those four guys on the backside.
I remember generally, Christian, too, when you're running that 3-4 base defense, those outside linebackers more often than not will rush the passer as opposed to dropping back into coverage. So as long as you're okay at that and it's not going to kill you, you can get away with it.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I would love to see Pierre-Paul really just focus on pass rushing at this point. You know, I just, as an offensive coordinator, it's hard to think they're not going to be trying to run JPP's way all the time.
Sure.
I mean, because Dalvin Tomlinson, you know, is so much more, of course, you know, in that type of scheme, but you know, it's just hard to think that if a 4-3 defensive end has less run responsibility in general than a 3-4 one, it's hard to just try to add more to JPP's load when he already didn't do so hot this year.
Now, Christian, that's why if I had to bet now, and again, this is just my bet. It's an educated guess. I have no idea what James Betcher is thinking. I think you would see JPP more as a stand-up guy and then a nickel pass rusher as a traditional end than you would see him as a 3-4 defensive end. They might use him there a little bit. I don't think he'll be there, you know, 40, 50 snaps a game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see them bring back Jay Bromley for that kind of role. I think he could do that.
You can also find somebody to play that role cheap in free agency as well if you want.
Well, and they also have some depth at the defensive end position if they want to continue to groom one of the young guys as well. So, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily dismiss that. Or,
Avery Moss, by the way, could be a good stand-up.
Yeah, I mean, and
that's
what I mean. One of the young guys, I would think that they would be in the conversation as well.
Yeah, and, you know, with a new coaching staff, I'd like to see these guys really play as much as they basically earn, because, you know, if you do have some, like, if you re-sign Kennard and he's out playing JPP, I'd rather see Kennard first and second down, bring JPP in third down. I'd really like to see something like that. I honestly think Devon Kennard is in a better place in his career right now than JPP. So if they bring him back on
he's a good
a mid-level deal, I'll be really happy.
Listen, he was moved around at USC.
Thank you, Christian. Appreciate the call. And he played that 3-4 stand-up rush position at USC.
Yeah.
There's another USC guy, by the way, coming out that plays that position this year too. Ochenna Onwusi, I think, something like that.
Well, I'm going to let you say the name since you're so passionate about him.
I'll
so.
Look it up again. Yeah. I actually spoke to him at the Senior Bowl. Nice kid.
Well, if Kennard is the type of player that Betcher says to himself, hey, this is how they utilized him in college, this is how they utilized him here with the Giants, and he feels he's a good fit, I could certainly see the Giants bringing him back. I mean, the other thing you got to ask yourself is, with Kennard's injury history, too, let's not forget about that, how much interest is somebody like that going to receive on the open market? I don't know. Maybe that plays right into the hands of the Giants, where they could bring him back on a reasonable contract. A lot also depends on what Kennard's thinking. Does he want to branch out as a player, or does he like how perhaps James Betcher would envision utilizing him? I mean, I agree with Christian's point that I think there is some talent on this team that values and is worth bringing back, but I also wouldn't go so far to say that if one player is outplaying another that you automatically dismiss the guy that's making more money. You have to take into consideration JPP's presence on the field, whether or not he is executing it to the level that you want, meaning the sack numbers are there. Teams are still game planning about JPP being on the field, and just because you're not recording a tackle on every single play doesn't mean you're not having an impact on the field. And that, I think, sort of gets all of a sudden thrown to the wayside because you don't see the sack numbers, and the numbers were down this year. But that still doesn't mean that teams are not saying to themselves, well, we need to account for him on the field, and maybe we should go the opposite direction as opposed to going in his direction. So you have to take that into consideration as well.
I'll give you your chance.
Ochenna Onwusi. I would think the N is silent.
It could be Onwusi, but you're right. The N could be silent.
The N could be silent.
Ochenna Onwusi, who's the one of the he's one of those 3-4 stand-up pass rushers who, you know, kind of has that position flex and question is where he'll fit in.
And I would think a guy like that heading into the draft is something that maybe Gettleman is keeping in mind with respect to Betcher's game.
And I'll throw out another little nugget. Dane Brugler, who's one of our – he'll be with us at the Combine. He's from the Sports Exchange, NFL Draft Scout. He put out his pre-Combine, his second mock draft of the year. And he's one of the guys that usually is very much on top of things. He had the Giants picking number 2. Take a guess. Who do you think he had him taking? He had Sam Darnold going number 1 to Cleveland.
Well, if you're setting me up to think that he's going differently than the majority, which it sounds like you're doing, unless you're just playing games with me.
I've been known to play games before.
I will say that he's going in the direction of Josh Rosen.
Bradley Chubb.
Really?
He's the first Chubb. That's why I thought it was interesting.
Okay,
we're talking
that is
about
interesting.
Pass rushers. So I thought he was special to note, remember?
Okay.
Dave Gettleman has liked picking defensive linemen in the first round. Very interesting.
And that's part of the Giants' history as well, regardless of who's been the general manager.
Can't have enough pass rushers, Lance Meadow. Don't let having others on the roster stop you.
If you go back to those Carolina drafts, he took in the first round defensive linemen. A lot of people are going to look at McCaffrey in 17. I'm talking about go back a few years. Defensive linemen have been there.
Kaywon Short.
Yep.
Coney Ealy, I think, was the year before Gettleman got there, correct?
Coney Ealy may have been there the year before. Yeah. Star, though, was there.
Star Lotilele?
Yes, exactly. See, I'm leaving all the pronunciations to you. I'm not doing the heavy lifting today. You can
That's
have
okay.
the tongue twisters, yes.
Well, speaking of heavy lifting.
Oh, boy. It's very early in the show, by the way, for him. Is there any reason?
Losing his mind.
Does this have to do with a previous program that I wasn't here for?
Yeah, we...
Oh, wonderful.
I'll tell you this.
I am happy.
No, I don't mind talking over this, because this to me is a waste anyway, so...
So basically, on Friday, we have Beagles, we play the Open.
Okay.
We're like, it's Charlie in Portland, Maine. Dial tone.
Hey,
oh, wow.
Best part of the show.
I'm disappointed he didn't do that when I was hosting. I would have loved to have been here.
Hi, Charlie. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, on Friday, I work on Friday, so.
You work?
You work, yeah. That's my question.
Yeah.
Startling news here.
Charlie, in my mind, I see you almost as like a Cosmo Kramer character, where somehow you manage to like have money and figure it out, but you really, you know, you kind of just go about your business and do random things.
I thought he was on like the illegal cream market selling people Attica all the time. That's what I thought he did for a living. Just walking the streets, here, have some Attica. Rub it on your knee.
He's the crazy guy in the corner with like his homemade like salves.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's my side job.
Oh, that's your side job. Excuse me. Okay. Gotcha.
Hey, I just want to say is that, hey, they could still transition tag Noel and you know, that would be smart for Carolina to do that.
Yeah, you can transition a franchise in the same year, or can you?
I was
one
just
tag?
About to look that up for confirmation. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just want to confirm
and you
that,
can
though.
Franchise.
Okay.
Oh yeah, you definitely can. So if they would be smart to do that, so at least they can match the offer.
No, here we go. The transition tag. Hold on, Charlie. The transition tag can be used once a year by each club. Unless they elect to use a franchise tag instead.
Oh, they can't.
So
use
see
it.
That,
oh,
yeah, that's why that sounded funny to me, and that's why I wanted to confirm.
Charlie.
So that's two strikes. That's two strikes in a row. The dial tone on Friday, and then giving unfactual information here on Monday. Okay.
I'm not sure unfactual.
I was going to say I butchered that. I know I butchered that. So see, this is what happens. Charlie has that effect on me. Yeah. So non-factual. Okay. Yes.
All right. So they can't do that.
Yes.
Hey, that's a bummer. But hey, look, we're talking about the Jaguars,
bummer.
Right?
Move on casually as if it was nothing. Yeah.
How much does they have in cap space? Don't the Jaguars have a ton of money in cap space?
They don't have as much as they did previously because of the moves last year with Bouye and Calais Campbell. That took up a lot of their salary cap space.
Known as Bouye in other walks of life. So
what did I say, Bouye?
Bouye. But I like Bouye. The Bouye. It's
sorry
got more
that.
Of a rolling. Yeah.
Bouyah, maybe?
Bouyah, yeah.
Stuart Scott?
Yes.
I will check on their cap space according to the internet, Charlie, for you.
All right. Well, they got more than we do, at least right now, anyway. But the thing why they ended up signing Bortles for two more years is because the Giants decided to keep Eli for at least one more year. Because if they hadn't, Eli would have been going there. If the Giants had said, we're moving on, then they would have grabbed Eli in a heartbeat. But since he's staying here, they figured, two years we can deal with Bortles, and then we'll go on from there. So,
I think that, you know, listen, that story started speculating all last season. I think it's convenient because of the Tom Coughlin connection. But you also have to understand, if you're Jacksonville – and I understand that the window may be small because you don't have everybody under contract from a defensive perspective, but I think it makes more sense. If they want to move out from Bortles, I'd go after Kirk Cousins and invest in a younger guy who you could build upon for a good 10 years or so.
And by the way, I will point out, too, Charlie. Sorry, Lance.
That's wrong.
The Jaguars only had $20 million of cap space before – the Bortles deal, and believe it or not, the way that deal was structured, it actually saved them, and this is another reason I think the deal made sense, it saved them $9 million on this year's cap.
Because it lowered his cap number.
Right. It lowered it from 19.5 to 10.
That's huge.
So right now, according to Over the Cap, the Jaguars have $30 million of cap space.
Yeah, so you gain more cap space, essentially, by restructuring his deal.
And remember, though, much like the Giants, Charlie, the Jaguars have to be careful. They can't spend all this money now. You know, they're going to have Jalen Ramsey coming down the road. They're going to have the linebacker coming down the road. They're going to have a bunch of their Dante Fowler coming down the road. They got a bunch of guys coming down the road that they're going to have to figure out whether or not they're going to sign. Allen Robinson, too, by the way, another guy they have to decide if they're going to re-sign or not.
He's a free agent this year, yeah.
So those are all decisions that they're going to have to make that will affect how much money they can actually spend this year.
Yeah, well, the thing is, too, is that I don't know what Getz is doing, but he's got to start cutting some people because if he wants to get more cap space, which sounds like it to me.
You got plenty of time. He's got plenty of time, Charlie,
Well, the free agency's coming
Miles
up.
Miles Jack.
I think when he cuts everybody, we're going to have about $40 million under the cap, and I think we can still go out and get two offensive linemen in free agency.
Charlie, you're not getting two of the top guys. It's not happening. You're not going to spend over $100 million on two offensive linemen in free agency. It's not realistic.
Yeah, but it's not going to be $200 million because it's just guaranteed money. The guaranteed money is always like puny compared to, you know, their big contracts that go on for 20 years. And they're never going to see that money. So you guarantee – I just see, and they think Soldier might
Charlie,
get $12 million.
Well, Charlie, you know? time out. If you go out and you give Andrew Norwell a five-year deal, he's 24 years old. He's going to play out that contract.
Maybe not. Not if you
well, then it's a bad signing.
Money in the first 2 years.
And then what are you going to do? You're going to cut him after year two? So that was worth it?
Well, that's an option. You can, or you can restructure like they do all the time.
Well, that's always an option to restructure. I don't disagree with you there. But I think you also have to understand that when you give a guy a deal, you're right about he may not see the entire contract and the guaranteed money is the most important aspect, but he's still taking up cap space as you lay out your future. You know, it's not like you're playing with Monopoly money here, Charlie. Yes, he may not be on the books 4 years down the road, but you still need to plot it in, and then you need to say to yourself, okay, if we want to re-sign and give Odell Beckham a contract, Landon Collins. You got to fit all this stuff in. I mean, this is not make-believe funny money.
And by the way, Charlie, base salary matters if you have so much dead money on that contract that you can't afford to cut them. Then that base salary does count against your cap, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, there's implications in the event that you make changes like that.
Yeah, well, I still think Getz is going to get two offensive linemen in this free agency, and they're going to be good ones. And I was glad to hear some rumors that, hey, you know, the Giants could pick Nelson number two. I don't know where that came from.
No, look, Charlie, I agree with you. Yeah. I think they could sign two free agent offensive linemen, no question. Do I think they're going to sign the best guard and the best tackle? No, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, we need a left tackle. That's my priority. You know, I would love to get the two guys from Notre Dame, Nelson and McGlinchey.
Unless you somehow manage to get another pick at the back end of the first round, I don't think McGlinchey is going to be there for you at the top of the second.
We'll have to see how when they start on runs with things. So everyone's looking for offensive linemen.
Yeah, Charlie, you want Nelson and McGlinchey. So he just said that he wants to sign two free agent offensive linemen. Now we went to the draft for two. I'm confused. Are you following along?
Apparently he wants to put every resource the Giants have into the offensive line.
Can we get like a translator on this show to make sense of Charlie's calls? He jumps around.
We're going for offensive linemen.
I just want you to stay in one lane of how you're getting the offensive linemen. That's all I'm asking.
No, he wants all of them. He wants to sign Bowman for agency, then he wants to draft two. He wants four of two huge contracts and a first and second round pick and maybe a trade up involved for four offensive linemen.
Let me ask you this, Charlie. Which current offensive lineman has the honor of returning to the starting lineup to complete the equation?
I would have none of them.
Where's the fifth offensive lineman coming from then? If you're bringing in four new guys.
Oh, I know.
Where's the fifth guy?
They're going to sign Will Beatty.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but where are you putting Will Beatty, though?
At tackle.
Oh, so he's right tackle, though, I'm assuming.
Notre Dame guys on your right side, right? You're going to get yourself a new center.
Okay.
And then you're going to have Soldier, and you're going to have
What are you putting, Beatty a guard?
No. Beatty's going to be a backup. He's going to be a swing guy.
Swing guy, excuse me. All right.
Yeah.
This is evolving over the course of the phone call.
You're going to have Fluker as your left back.
Fluker can't play left guard, by the way. He can only play right guard.
Why?
I don't know why Charlie wasn't hired as the offensive line coach. I really don't. I don't get it.
Yeah. Who's this guy, Hunter? I mean – come on, there had to be a better guy out there than
It was
dude.
You. It was you. I can't believe they overlooked you. I mean, you got everything figured out. You got Fluker on the left, Fluker on the right.
For a year, so I was out for 1 year, too. So.
You've been out for more than 1 year, I'll tell you that. That may be putting it politely, to be honest with you.
Thank you, Charlie.
All right, Charlie.
Okay, guys.
Appreciate the phone call.
I understand trying to fix the offensive line. I think that amount of resources might be slightly excessive.
Yes.
By the way, the Giants will have to play defense this year, and they have a new coordinator with a different scheme. You might want to save a pick or a dollar, one or the other,
maybe
for
Make
a defensive
useful,
player
yes.
or two.
I didn't know that's fascinating that there's other facets to a football team. I was convinced just the quarterback plays football, but that's good to know.
Well, there's just the quarterback in the offensive line.
Yes, just the quarterback in the offensive line. How they get in the end zone, that remains to be seen, but we'll figure it out as we go along. But I do agree with, in all seriousness, the concept of you could very well target some combination of three offensive linemen.
Sure.
It's just a matter of is it two in free agency, two in the draft, or vice versa.
Yeah, I think I have no problem if you want to draft two offensive linemen. You want to draft, well, you know, even if you want to draft two on the first 2 days, I'm okay with that too. That's fine. But I'm not, you can do a lot of things with the salary cap. If you want to, you know, basically blow up your cap for the next 5 years, the Giants can go out there and spend $120 million on Nate Solder and Andrew Norwell. Yeah, they could do it if they want, sure.
Just know that you're going to have to sacrifice other things. That's all.
Yeah.
It's a give and take.
Yeah, in 3 years, you might have to start cutting guys left and right. That's just the way it goes. You can do it. We're just trying to tell you what we think is realistic. And look at how Dave Gettleman operated in Carolina. He was very careful in how he handled his salary cap. He always let guys go maybe a year early rather than a year too late. Why? He wanted to keep the salary cap in check. And Kevin Abrams, who's been the Giants salary cap guy here for a few years, what's been his MO as, you know, the guy with the Giants that negotiates all these contracts? He's done a fantastic job of never having a ton of dead money on the Giants' salary cap lands. When's the last time he went into a year? We've seen it with other teams like the Raiders and the Cowboys and the Redskins.
What about what Gettleman inherited in Carolina?
The perfect example.
I mean, he inherited a mess.
Where you're staring at $20 to $30 million on your cap that's going to guys that aren't even on your roster anymore. The Giants have never operated that way, and I don't see them putting themselves in a situation here where they're going to have to operate that way in the future.
Yeah, and that's important. Plus, the other thing that I would note with Gettleman, if you look at the Carolina track record, is when he moved away from some of those veterans, he also then turned to the draft to fill the void as opposed to then go out on a spending spree. For example, when Josh Norman was let go, they addressed the secondary in the draft. And same thing when Steve Smith was let go.
Two third-round picks, I believe, on the corners.
I don't remember the rounds. You could be correct. But they definitely targeted – they may even targeted somebody in the late first round, to be honest with you, John,
I'll take a look. Let me take a look.
I mean, I know he brought in a lot of young guys because if you notice
– Tankersley was one of them. I remember the other guy.
The secondary, the production dropped off a little the year that Norman left. And everybody was like, oh, was it the right decision? But notice how the Panthers' defense bounced back this year. Because you give these young players some experience.
Sorry, it was a second and third round pick, not second, a third and fourth. And it was not Tankersley, it was Bradbury. James Bradbury and Darrell Worley was drafted in the second round and third round in 2016. And then they drafted Corn Elder in the fifth round in 2017.
So that was his game plan when he moved on from some of those established veterans. And it wouldn't surprise me if he picks up and adopts a similar game plan here with the Giants.
The fact he had one... If I go back, and I think it was only one big veteran, big money free agent signing in Carolina. You know who it was?
Well, Khalil, who was just added this past offseason.
Khalil, the left tackle. Yeah. So if you want to look to see
and that's
where
Matt,
he's –
because Ryan was already on the
correct.
Team, just to
where
clarify.
He's looking to spend, maybe a veteran left tackle. That's what he was willing to do in Carolina to try to address that problem. So you want to look at free agency? Does that mean that's what he's doing now? No. But it at least is an example of a history and where he has spent money before. 201-939-4513. Phil, down in North Carolina. He's up next. Hi, Phil.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Loud okay? Yeah, we got you, Phil. What's up?
Okay. A couple of things. One, I haven't called in since the transfer of power there, but a couple of comments on that. One thing I've always felt was that if we let like someone like Tony Pauline run our draft for the last 5 years, we would have a better team right now.
If you did what? I'm sorry?
He let Tony Pauline run the draft, he said.
Oh. Why is that?
Why is that? Because, you know, every time we would get a draft analysis of what was going on, we would always say, oh, the Giants overreached. You know, Giants overreached on Mikal Thompson, which is Len's favorite, and so many others, Marvin Austin, and, you know, and all these guys. Double O, and they would always say, oh, they probably overreached. And
I
would
like
say, nah, what do they know? But I think we did on all those cases. We overreached.
Well, Phil, just specifically on one of the guys you mentioned, Double O was much more of a high-risk, high-reward thing given his injury history. A lot of people had him as a first- or second-round talent. So I think Double O wasn't necessarily a situation where they reached for somebody. I think it was like, well, you know what, we'll roll the dice on this guy's upside and, you know, take the chance that maybe his injuries or something else might derail his career, just on him specifically.
Okay, yeah, probably so with the Double O there.
Yeah.
But you get the gist.
I do.
You know,
yeah.
I think it's because we essentially overrated our the high speed deliverables and underappreciated our the desire to play football. And I think that's why a gentleman must have said that in his interview, and he said that in the press conferences. He wants guys that want to play football and hate to lose. So that's a determination thing, and you don't get that from running fast. So I'm happy about that, and I'm hoping that as we move on to the draft, that we put the priority on guys that want to play football, and we actually sit down and talk to these guys instead of just watching the tape. So I'm going to take my answers off the air and keep up the good work. I'm looking forward to this week's out in the combine here. So take care.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate it. Yeah, look, I think you could make the argument that maybe that was too much of a reliance on the height, weight, speed, you know, concept in years past. But look, I mean, you had the 1 year with, you know, you talk about guys that want to love to play football. 1 year they drafted, what, 4 team captains, I think, a couple years ago, and that was a trend for a little bit. So, look, however you want to pinpoint it, I think for every individual player, there's an individual reason why that individual player didn't happen to work out, and it's very specific from guy to guy. I hate to put a big blanket over all of them, Lance. I don't think it's fair because it's, you know, everything is unique from guy to guy. But look, the evaluations just, you know, weren't good enough, and you hope that the new group here led by Dave Gettleman, and based on the history you think it will be, that the evaluation process will be more of a positive.
Well, it's an inexact science. I mean, listen, you always want rationale behind why you take a player, but you can't necessarily expect to know whether or not that player is going to come to fruition, because injuries come to the team if you're in the tub, and that's these prospects. It's because the last call brought up Marvin Austin, and I mean, I don't even know if I would describe Marvin Austin as a reach.
No, same thing with Noah.
Because here's the thing with Austin. Marvin Austin, remember, was rated as a first-round pick and then wound up missing because of issues off the field and injuries and everything. So they had him extremely high. If he would have been drafted the year before, and then I think the logic was obviously, well, we got this guy sitting here. He's a first-round value. You know, is it a good spot to be taking a chance on a guy? I think that was the rationale. Granted, it didn't work out.
Correct.
But I don't think that was a reach. I would not explain that as a reach. I'd put it under the umbrella of didn't work out, didn't pan out. But I don't think reach is a fair label for the Marvin Austin selection.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Right. I think there are other guys you might be able to put into that category, but I don't think Owen and Marvin Austin are two of the guys you would. You know, maybe, you know, some people have commented that maybe Eric Flowers is one of those guys. Because the other tackles went off the board, maybe you took them a little bit higher than you would have wanted. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I would understand. I wouldn't necessarily classify it that way, but I understand why somebody else would. You go back into the later rounds, you know, like a Michael Thompson, who, you know, maybe got picked a little bit higher than some people thought he would that particular year. But look, like I said, you don't want to necessarily put a huge blanket over everyone. You know what I mean? Everything's individual. And a lot of times, frankly, you know, draft experts are wrong a lot, too.
Well,
I mean, that's the thing. You know, you can't just say, you remember when these guys are right, but then you forget when they're wrong.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I was just thinking in passing, how many people actually go back and look at after the draft? Like, do we ever do that? Do we ever look at Mel Kiper's draft board and see how many in the first round he actually predicted
correctly?
Oh, it's
usually very poorly.
No, but does anyone do that consistently just to see and show you that, first of all, you can only put so much stock and substance in a mock draft. And number two, you know, what's the success rate every single year? And I'm not trying to throw any of these guys under the bus because it's an inexact science.
Oh, it's
and
impossible.
Also, and they have no idea how many trades are going to happen. They don't know sometimes, you know, how the first round is going
to
play out.
And
so
GMs actually lie to them about stuff.
Yeah,
I mean,
because,
how are you going to know?
So I don't fault them for getting this stuff wrong. I'm looking at it more from when the fans are critical and saying, oh, well, you know, how did this guy, you know, not know this? I think that maybe provides a little proper perspective.
Yeah, and frankly, even more important than the mock draft to me is just the evaluations of these players in general. I mean, sometimes the general evaluation on guys is just not correct, and people get it wrong. It happens to everybody. It's not just unique to here.
Well, that's why I prefer to hear the logic behind why somebody
correct.
Is saying
right. mm-hmm.
they think the player is going to go there, John, as opposed to just giving me a laundry list of players. If you have rationale to make the argument, I'm fine. Just
right.
like I said, at number two, I could hear out quarterback Barkley trading down because I think there's logic behind all of those.
All right, we got 13 minutes or 12 minutes now. We have 3 calls, so let's get to a Marco in Connecticut is up next. Hi, Marco.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. Good night, Marco. How are you?
I'm doing well. So this is my favorite week. When you know, I love your show, guys, but when you guys head over to the Combine, I love it. It's a must-listen.
Thank you.
Two things that I'm looking to get from your shows this week is I definitely want to learn more about Bradley Chubb. I feel like I don't know a lot about him, and I should, and I think he's it sounds like he's definitely in play there. It's just no one's really talking about defense as far as – or maybe Minka Fitzpatrick, but not so much defense for the number two pick.
Marco, you know how it goes. Everyone wants the splash player. They want a guy with a ball in his hands, whether it's a running back or a quarterback or a receiver. Sure. They don't care about a defensive lineman or safety or a guard. They want the guy that's going to be, wow, it's awesome. Look at this guy. He's with all the touchdowns. You know, that's what people want. It's always been that way.
Sure. And I'm also interested in hearing where a lot of the guys that you're going to be bringing on, John, where they view if Davis Webb was coming out in this draft. I don't think it's a deal breaker, but I think it's important to know. And I'm curious, and I think it paints a little bit of a picture. This is my point, and actually one of the callers that came on before. I think the way the resources are going to kind of be allocated here with free agency in the draft, for me personally, I would like one offensive lineman to come out of free agency and one to come out of the draft. I think two in free agency, but not breaking the bank for two. So what I want to see is a veteran left tackle, not a soldier, someone else. And I don't have a list in front of me, but literally the Giants can just choose someone that's been a solid left tackle somewhere in the league to come in and compete with Wheeler at left tackle. And then
easier said than done, Marco. There aren't a lot of those guys as free agents. Yeah. I'm just warning you ahead of time. It's easy to say that, but actually finding that guy can be pretty difficult.
Right. I know. And I guess I'm thinking back to maybe like before the David Deal years, how they were able to do that with I guess not. They had Pettigrew then, and they had some other guys. This is why I'm saying that, because I think Eric Flowers should be the right tackle, and I think the center should be Brett Jones.
Okay.
But you have some gaps to fill in there. So for me, I'd like to see either Norwell or Pugh be the left guard, and I would draft Nelson at two. And then I don't think you could just put Chad Wheeler in at left tackle. He needs to be competing with someone. I don't think it should be Eric Flowers. And I also think it's a little irresponsible for any fans to be thinking that Flowers is not in the five. He absolutely should be somewhere in the five or on the team or, you know, as well as John Jerry. It's kind of hard to point to pencil him in somewhere. I'd love to get your comments on that. And guys, I've been listening, and John, you kind of changed the way I was thinking about Nelson. A couple weeks ago, you said something like, I think you were on with Jeff, and you asked him, would you draft Khalil Mack over Zach Martin? And he said, yes. And I said, yes, too, listening to you. And then you said, would you draft Donald over Zach Martin? And agreed, yes. I just think with Nelson, I'm looking at the money that these guards are getting, and it's like it's astronomical to think like they're making such big money. And a lot of these Peter King wrote something about pressure that defensive linemen bring up the middle nowadays and how quarterbacks hate that pressure coming up the middle. Why not draft a guard? Especially
fair
because
point too.
He seems to be so clean and, like, you know, cleaner than Barkley, cleaner than any of the quarterbacks. Why not just pencil that in knowing that you may have an all-pro there and you don't have to worry about it?
That's the argument for it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marco. I appreciate it. And the conversation he's referencing before is that there's a lot of people have compared Zach Martin to Quentin Nelson. And, you know, they're both guards at Notre Dame, both highly regarded.
Yep.
And, you know, people are like, oh, wouldn't you have loved to get – you know, to have Zach Martin in that 2014 draft? Yeah, absolutely, right? Well, here are some other guys in that class, you know? Would you rather have Zach Martin or Jadeveon Clowney? Would you rather have Zach Martin or Cleo Mack? Zach Martin or Jake Matthews? Zach Martin or Mike Evans? Zach Martin or Anthony Barr? Zach Martin or Terrell Lewan? Zach Martin or Odell Beckham Jr.? Zach Martin or Aaron Donald? So as good or even Ryan Shazier, who obviously now with the injury, sure, but before that.
Yeah.
So the question is, yeah, Zach Martin might make more Pro Bowls than anybody else that I just listed on that group. But because of the importance of individual positions, you might still prefer to have those other players as Zach Martin if you're redrafting today. And that brings up the question, is it worth it to pick a guard at two?
Well, I agree with you. Plus, also, let's take into consideration, what, Zach Martin was 16th overall, if I'm seeing that correctly? 16-2? That's a sizable difference.
Well, that's why Zach Martin at 16 is a steal, but Zach Martin at two, you're like,
no, well, especially if I'm redrafting that year,
correct.
I'm not taking Zach Martin at number two.
And I think,
and I love Zach Martin. I think he's a solid player.
Oh, so do I.
But I'm not taking him at two.
And I think that's my point. And I'm not telling you that there's a Khalil Mack in this draft or whatever. I'm not telling you there is. But I think that's what gives you pause about Quentin Nelson picking him at two.
Yeah, because it goes back to – I agree, first of all, everything that Marco said in terms of the importance of protection on the interior. I think those are all great points. But I think when you're an executive, you also need to be saying to yourself, are we maximizing the number two pick?
Correct.
Does Nelson maximize the value of number two? He could be a great player. He could solve what Marco was referring to about protection on the interior. But if I were to give you other options at number two, would they provide me more value in the long run of my franchise?
Bingo. And I think that's why it can be tough. And by the way, you'll be proud of me. We had a conversation. I forgot what the caller was, but he posed me a great question. He said, all right, John, here's the scenario. And we'll get to the final two calls in a second. You're picking at two. You're the GM. Darnold goes one. You can't trade down. Who do you pick? And I had a lot of trouble answering the question. I sat here for about 15 or 20 seconds, and I thought about it. You know who I picked?
Baker Mayfield?
I did.
You went with Baker Mayfield. Okay.
I did. I thought he was the most value at that selection. And I've kind of wavered back. I've thought about it over the weekend, and I've kind of wavered back and forth a little bit. I still like him more than Rosen, but I think that's a really tough situation. I don't think that's a very difficult pick. What would you do in that situation? You can't trade down. Darnold's gone at one. What do you do with the second pick?
Well, I would lean with you towards Baker Mayfield, but the question is different if you ask me what I think the Giants are going to do. I would not think they're going
to
take Baker Mayfield at two.
I have
see, my
to
opinion
agree.
Is completely different than what I think the team would do.
Well, I was asking your opinion
yeah,
first.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly would think very heavily about taking Baker Mayfield. Absolutely.
And I agree. I think me and you will be more likely to pick them than necessarily the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me what I think the team is going to do, and it's not that I don't think the team values his talent. I don't think he fits in line with the typical Giants-esque type of quarterback.
No, he's not
is
Eli Manning.
Fair?
Like, if you put him next to Eli Manning, they're very different players.
So that's why I would think that he wouldn't necessarily fit into their logic and their thinking. I don't think it's that they don't value him as a football player, but there are other things that are taken into consideration when a player is drafted. You got
what do you think
that.
The Giants would do in that situation? You can't
if
trade
Darnold
down
is
and
off
Darnold's
the board,
gone.
And they have still the option of Saquon Barkley, an offensive lineman,
Chubb, Fitzpatrick,
quarterback. Boy.
It's hard, right?
Yeah, it's
hard.
Difficult. Well, because the reason why it's difficult is if I knew what the room, whether or not the room is on the same page with a quarterback.
Let's say they're not.
If they're not on the same page with the quarterback, then the quarterback is off the table.
No, of course.
They're not going with
That's
quarterback.
Fine.
So then you're then choosing between offensive lineman Chubb and Saquon Barkley, and I would probably lean towards Saquon Barkley.
See, I think because of Gettleman's past, I think I might lean towards Chubb.
No, Chubb makes sense, but here's the thing. He took Christian McCaffrey.
That's true,
so that's why I'm not.
That's a good point.
If you go based on history, John, I don't think you could take Barkley off the table.
No,
I think they both fit into his philosophy.
I agree with you. I think it's a very, very tough decision, though.
Yeah.
And I think, by the way, I said it on Friday. I'll say it again. Reserving the right to change my mind. This is all just very early.
Things evolve as you get new information. Yeah.
Jay in Brooklyn, he's up next, and he wants to talk about the quarterbacks. Hi, Jay.
Hey, guys, real quick, just on the guard. I think it's ironic that the same people who want to go out and spend upwards of $12 million a year for Norwell don't want to draft a guard second overall.
Well, here's the thing, though. What kind of a wide receiver does $12 million get you? What type of quarterback does $12 million get you? And that's the difference we're talking about with value. $12 million gets you the best guard. It gets you a middling wide receiver. So is it worth using the second overall pick in the draft in a guard when you can get the best player at another position that holds more value on the open market? You know what I'm saying, Jay?
Yeah, I think the problem I have with that is that the way the Giants roster is, that money can be spread over so many different areas of need. Like, if you look at their offensive line and their linebacker situation, it is really, really bad.
No, that's fair. And you're right. You can use that money over different positions if you don't want to spend it on one of the top guys at one of the offensive line spots. That's absolutely fair.
Well, but here's the other thing. We'll let you continue, Jay. But I think counter to that, which is interesting to ask, is would you rather take that $12 million and spread it across the board and get guys that are pretty much middle of the pack at all of their respective positions? Or if I were to tell you, I take the $12 million, I'm not using all the $12 million, but I'm going to get one of the most impactful players at his respective position using that money.
And you can even throw Nigel Bradham into that mix, too. Do you throw a lot of money at Bradham, or do you try to get two or three different guys?
So, I think you got to ask yourself, because it's one thing to your point, Jay, to say, well, they have needs across the board, and you can use that money across the board. But if you're bringing in middle-of-the-pack guys that you could probably draft, is it really spending your money wisely? I think you got to ask yourself that.
I think that's a tough situation. This is why Gettleman has a job and a half in front of him going forward.
Indeed.
I mean, with the people, I think fans are a little, I don't want to say too optimistic, because I think they think that this team is closer to 11-5 than the 3-13. I think the way this roster is right now, they're a little closer to that 3-13 than the 11-5.
How about
personally.
This? Split the difference.
I think that's a fair way to go.
Maybe they're a 7-win team.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Anyway, on the quarterbacks, real quick. I know the combine coming up. John, I'm with you on this. I've heard you say this before. I think you're 100% right. I think you either take the quarterback or you trade the pick. I know maybe you've changed since then, but I think those are the only two options, in my opinion.
Jay, I agree, but I still wouldn't trade back too far. I don't like the idea of going back to those Buffalo picks.
Now, saying that, with the combine coming up, is there a point in time where – there's a set date where these quarterbacks start to separate from one another?
I think, in my opinion, anything that happens between now and the draft, spare health in terms of their physicals and off-the-field stuff in terms of, like, drug tests and stuff like that, I think these front offices know what they know about these quarterbacks, and the most important evaluation has already been done, except for the interviews. That's the only thing that can change from here on out is the interviews. If any one of these guys throw up huge red flags when they talk to these teams, especially for a quarterback, it's so important to have the right type of guy be your quarterback. You know, so those are the three things: health, off the field stuff like drug tests, and the interviews. I don't think these scouts give two craps how they throw at the combine or throw at their pro day. They've seen them throw on film against defenses for years. They know that already. It's the other stuff that could change things.
Well, I mean, the only thing I'll add to that is I agree with you, John, but, I mean, if somebody really lays an egg at their pro day when there's no defense and they're like, well, what is up with this guy's accuracy, you may sort of cringe at that.
That's a fair point.
But I agree. The interview, to me, is what really could separate this bunch.
And you know what? I think, Jay, the two guys that could really hurt themselves at their pro day, actually, are Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. Because those are two guys,
because they're not ready or at the top of the list.
And people question their accuracy already. So if they're inaccurate at their pro days against no defense, I think that would raise flags with people. Because accuracy are the two things that I think are real big question marks for those two guys.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking is regardless to what situation you want to do, whether you want to keep the pick and draft the quarterback or you want to trade the pick, what I'm thinking as a fan of the team is, for the best-case scenario for them, is that two of these guys separate themselves before the draft and basically elevate themselves to where maybe not can't miss, because I don't know if any of these guys are ever going to be a can't miss
in
scout's eyes.
Yep.
But basically that by the time the draft comes, that we know who the two best quarterbacks are, and then that'll help either Giants, whether they pick one of the two or whether they want to trade a pick for one of the two, where the trade value will go, you know, real high.
Jay, you're absolutely right. And you know what? Even if it's three, I think that's fine, too.
And I think it's more likely
to...
Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it.
And I think it's still most likely to be a pack of three.
I agree.
Than to get to the point of two. See, this is not a year where it's Goff and Wentz or Mariota and Winston, where there's separation between the top two and then the rest of the pack. This is more of a group that's bunched together.
Yeah, three, and I think me and you, I think, are of the same opinion that it's three guys bunched at the top with Mayfield, Rosen, and Darnold, and I think we're in agreement with that. Other people, and I think Paul Dottino's one of them, they think Josh Allen's in that top group.
Yeah.
And they think there's four at the top. Some people think Allen's the best quarterback in the draft. I don't, but some people do. And I think other people think Lamar Jackson might even be in that group, and there might be five. depending on who you talk to.
I think I've heard various opinions across the board, so nothing surprises me in terms of commentary right now. You know, Rudolph is another one that some people were floating around. I remember even before we got to the Senior Bowl,
and
he got hurt.
Round.
So
sure.
That's the guy that you can even maybe see creep up, depending on what transpires in the next few weeks.
Peter in North Carolina, he wraps us up today. Hi, Pete.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing great.
Doing all right.
I'm curious where you see Ereck Flowers fitting into our offensive line rebuild.
Somewhere. I mean, I don't want to be really vague.
That's some
here.
Answer.
I don't know where. I believe he'll be a starter next year. I don't know where he's going to start. It could be a guard. It could be a right tackle. Heck, if they completely strike out, who knows? Maybe it could be left tackle again, though I think that's probably a little bit less likely. You see how he plays this year, and then you figure it out. Down the road, what's your next step is? I mean, if you want to pick up the fifth-year option, since it's non-guaranteed, you can do that. Of course, you risk an injury maybe making that a guaranteed fifth-year option, but I don't think picking up the fifth-year option is even out of the question, given it's a non-guaranteed deal with that money.
Well, here's the thing. Regardless of what you think of Ereck Flowers, he has value because he's on a rookie contract still. And that will not be dismissed by any executive that you ask, whether or not they think highly of the player or not.
So when you get
they're
going to
weigh that.
Though when you get to the fifth-year option, the number does go significantly
higher.
Yeah,
but right now we're at year four.
Correct.
So we're not even thinking about the fifth-year option, and Gettleman is under no pressure to say that he has to pick up the fifth-year option.
Well, you have to make that decision this
offseason.
Correct,
you have to make
the
decision, but even if you don't make that decision, he's still technically under contract for the fourth year.
Absolutely.
You know, and then they could determine, Ereck, we want to see something else out of you to determine whether or not we want to re-up you. But
you can re-sign the player even if you do not pick up the fifth
year
option.
Exactly.
Too.
You're not removing that from the plate. So the reason I bring up the contract is because I know there's a lot of fans out there, oh, well, this is time to start fresh, and Gettleman has no allegiance to Ereck Flowers because he didn't draft him. And all of that is factually correct. But at the same time, since you can't just bring in five new offensive linemen, and depth is important, and he is a player that has starting experience, even if you don't want him to start, there's value in him being on the roster as insurance if they wanted to go in that direction. So that's why I still envision a spot for him on this team, and I think that he could still very well compete for both tackle positions if they want to experiment him at the right side.
And by the way, that there would not be significant cap savings either if they decided to make some type of move like that either. So,
meaning in terms of what, letting him go, you're referring to?
Yeah, like you said, like if they decide, like you made the point. He has a very rookie contract.
Yeah.
So if you let him go, my point is that you're not going to have a bunch of extra cap space to go
spend
on somebody
else. You're gaining $20 million
correct,
to go out and sign a new offensive lineman.
Right.
So the risk-reward debate is not overwhelming with respect to keeping him, I guess is
correct.
What I'm talking about.
Yeah, because all his entire base salary this year is guaranteed.
Yeah.
So
more of a reason why there's incentive to hold on to somebody like that.
Correct.
I hope that perhaps answers your question, Peter. I know that was the long-winded version of the answer. We started with somewhere, and then we went to a little bit more specific.
Correct.
Yeah, I just have one other quick question for you. If the Giants trade back to maybe like 5 or 6 and they pick up that early extra second-round pick and they have a guy they like that starts to fall to maybe like the mid to late 20s, what do you think it would take to get back into the first round? If we gave up, you know, one of those extra second-rounders, what else do you think it would take to get back into the first round?
I think if to move up from like the 34th pick to the 24th pick, I think if you give up a second round pick, I think that'll get you there.
That should make up the difference. I mean, I don't have the chart in front of me, but I'd be stunned if the value is that huge.
And really, if you're just going from like 34 to 30, you might have been able to get away with just trading a third round pick too. Because remember, your third round pick is at the top of the round, so it has a little bit more value to it.
Cool. I appreciate it, guys.
Hey, appreciate it. Good
thanks
stuff,
for the phone
man.
Call.
All right, guys, thanks for hanging with us. Lance and I will be back tomorrow. We have a couple great interviews. Jonah Tolles from NDT Scouting and Jason Cole from Bleacher Report. We'll preview the combine with Jonah. We'll preview free agency with Jason. Make sure you tune in to Big Blue Kickoff Live tomorrow. And then Paul Dottino and I are off to Indianapolis and the combine. I know Lance will be tuned in each and every day.
Oh, absolutely.
Special longer shows, by the way,
from
12 to 2, two-hour extravaganzas.
Wow. I'm going to sit next to Dottino for 2 hours.
It's hard. He has the energy.
Good luck with that, yes.
All right, I'm going to list some of the guests. I won't get everybody. But here are some of the guys you'll hear from. Matt Miller, Bleacher Report, Dame Brugler, Draft Scout, Rob Rang, Draft Scout, Kyle Krabs, John Ledyard, NDT Scouting, Tony Pauline, Rick Saratella, NFL Draft Bible, Alex Marvez, SiriusXM NFL Radio, Paul Schwartz, Tom Rock, Art Stapleton, cover the Giants, Bob Glauber, Jenny Vrentis from Monday Morning Quarterback will be with us. Joe Corey, former NFL agent at Breakdown Free Agency. He'll be with us as well. So a lot of great guests will be coming your way over those 3 days. And on Wednesday, we'll have the press conferences from Shermer and Gettleman as well. I'll kind of curate those a little bit to make them a little bit shorter. We'll have those at the top of the show on Wednesday as well. Thanks for joining us. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day on Giants.com, everybody. Adios.
Have a good one.
This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
Caught by Ingram over the defender.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Rubens on the five, fumble the football. Bang. Sprint. Pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
Touchdown, Giants. Jump ball. Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown.